thank you for coming. I know it's late, but I appreciate you being here. And the topic for tonight's class is how to define your role in life through the story of Purim. Now, we're entering into the month of Adar, and Adar is strange because the rabbis tell us, it's a Gemara in Tainus that says, "Mishnichnas Adar marvin b'simcha." But why is that? When you go to the month of Adar, you're marbe b'simcha. You have extra happiness on Adar. Why? Because you have one day we can get drunk? Is that really it? Do we really think that Chazal is saying that because one day a year we can actually get drunk? Mishenichnas Adar marbim b'simcha. This is the month of happiness. You know, the rabbi's Irish. I had a guy in my law school class who's an Irish guy. Irish love to drink. So we had like 3 or 4 guys in a study group. I invited them all over for Sudan Purim. So he comes over to the house and we got 3 Purim guys and 1 Irish guy and we're drinking and going crazy. He comes over to me and goes, "Charlie, you got the best religion ever. This is a holiday. This is awesome." He goes, "I'm totally converting." I'm like, "Okay." I'm like, "But you got to convert after Yom Kippur." He's like, "What's that?" I'm like, "Wait till Yom Kippur comes and I'll show you." Could that be? Is it because we got saved from our enemies? We always get saved from our enemies. We're Jews, for God's sake. This is what we do for a living. Next month, we've got a much better story than this one. Is it because there's holidays? Well, Tishrei's got a lot more. So why is it? This month, Adar has Simcha. So, at the apex of the month is Purim. And Purim has an awesome story, and it has awesome personalities. The most fascinating of which is Esther. And what makes Esther so amazing is the dichotomy of her life. Esther opens up the Megillah. If you look in the Megillah in the beginning, Esther opens up completely meek, unambitious, quiet, and subordinate. Right? Everything Mordechai tells Esther to do, she does. Right? Haggai. Haggai's in charge of getting all the ladies ready to go see the king. You can imagine what it's like for Haggai's job. Right? Every woman comes in with what she likes to wear, and the makeup, and the hair, and the whole thing. Everyone's getting ready to see the king. I had a friend of mine who was in 5 towns with me. He lives in Woodmere. He's got 5 girls, God bless him. He said the only person he connects with in Tanakh is Haggai. Because this guy, his whole life, he's getting everyone getting ready up in the morning. Haggai's, it's Esther's turn. And he goes, "What do you need?" "Everyone's got something." She goes, "Nothing." "Nothing?" She becomes queen. The king goes, "Who are you?" "Nobody." "Where are you from?" "Nowhere." "I'm unambitious." And then something happens. She snaps. And she goes from being completely unambitious, meek and quiet, to becoming a power-broken heroine. She walks into the king's chambers, stares down the most powerful man in the universe, and says, "I want a meeting with you." Faces death. Stands in front of Haman. You ever get that feeling sometimes when you have a friend of yours, you want to say something, that you want to confront them on something? You know that feeling you get? She stares down Haman, the most powerful man, the most evil man, and goes, "You're the guy." "Yeah, him. He's the guy killing my people." She outplays them, not once, but twice. She goes, "Kill his kids. I want an extra day for Shushan. I want a Megillah in my name." Esther. Talk about a woman. "I want a Megillah in my name." How did she go from being completely unambitious to becoming a power-broken heroine that saves the Jews from annihilation? So if you look closely in the Megillah, you find the moment she transforms, possibly, in my opinion, the most inspiring moment, were 2 lines in Tanakh. And hopefully we're going to see this in the video soon with Eliyahu. Here's the background. Haman's gaining power. Everyone knows the story. Haman becomes the man in the entire land. He gets the king's signet ring. And when you get the signet ring, it means you can make law. And Haman goes, "Wait a second. I am a massive anti-Semite. What should I do first with my new power? I got an idea. Let me make a law to kill Jews. This is awesome." So he does a little pour. He makes a thing. Comes out. In Adar, Jews are going down. Awesome. He's having a great time. Jews find out and they go insane. Can you imagine, God forbid, this happened today to us? What would we be doing right now if a law came out from Congress, Jews are going to die in 12 months? We'd go nuts. We'd have tilling sessions. We'd be crying. We'd be davening. The kids would be crying. We'd be in Washington. We'd be protesting. We'd be writing letters. What would we be doing? Jews and Shushan were exactly the same. It was a regular city. It was a regular town. It was a regular government. They were going crazy. They were fasting. They were crying. Their leader Mordechai comes in and he's protesting. They're in front of the king's palace. And Mordechai goes, this is awesome. I got a connection in the palace. He calls his niece and he goes, Esther, you got to do something. The king doesn't know what's going on. You got to go in there. And Esther says, whoa, wait a second. I'm Esther. What are you talking about? Remember, meek, unambitious. I can't go in. You don't get it. If I walk in, I'm going to get killed. And he goes, we're all going to die. And she goes, I can't do it. In fact, do me a favor, please change your clothing because you're embarrassing us. You look like such a weirdo with all that stuff going on. Change it. Be normal. Stop. And he looks at her and he says the following. He says, Imachareish tacharishi be'ez hazos. If you're quiet now, Revach v'atzala ya'amod la'yehudim b'makom acher. Don't worry. If you're quiet right now, if we're meant to be saved, we'll be saved. Va'at, and you, u'beisa avich, and your legacy, Tovedu, is gone. U'mi yodeya, and who knows? Im la'es kazos, higat l'machos. And who knows if this moment you became queen? What do you think? You're just born so beautiful because? You think you were picked from all the women in the entire land to be queen just because? You've got a role to play. You've got a tafkid in this world. God put you here for a reason. And now's your time to play. What was Mordechai doing? There's a Gemara that says, Yesh kone olama b'shah achas. There's somebody, there's a time, there's a moment where someone could acquire his whole life, could change everything in a moment. This happens sometimes in life to us. We shift our paradigms. We see things differently. In a moment, our whole lives are different. And Mordechai was trying his hardest to shift Esther in a moment. He was trying to take her and transform her from being an individual within the community to being a necessary and critical part of the Jewish community. Why? Because when you see yourself as being necessary for something, then you can give yourself up for that cause. And this happens all the time. I'll tell you a good story. When I was younger, I played basketball for Yeshiva Flatbush. I went to school, I went to Flatbush, and all I cared about was girls and ball, in that order. And it was ball time, and we were playing MTA in the playoffs. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the schools, I'm sure most of you are. It's a big deal. 10th grade, in Flatbush, big deal. So we're playing the game and we're down. And we're playing, it's at the end of the game, and the ball hits off the leg of one of my teammates and starts going out of bounds. So I'm running for it full speed. And I'm getting closer and closer and closer and closer, and I'm realizing the ball's going out of bounds. So what do I do? And if you've ever been to Flatbush before, Flatbush has these huge wooden benches, very hard benches. I do a full-out dive for the ball. Catch it, save it. I go headfirst into the benches. Mild concussion. It was awesome. My mother goes crazy. If anyone knows my mother, you know, she goes nuts. I go straight to the doctor the next morning. Doctor looks at me. He's a very straight guy. You know those doctors? Like super straight. Never played a day of sports in his whole life. And he goes, what happened? I said, playoff game, MTA. Dove into the benches. Tried to save the ball. And I did. So he said, why did you dive headfirst into the benches for? I said, it was a playoff game. He goes, why would you risk your health for a basketball game? I'm like, are you a guy? I'm like, what do you mean? Why would I not? It was a playoff game against MTA. I would jump off a building to win. So he's like, I don't understand. I'm like, yes, you don't. I'm like, Ma, let's get out of here. I need a doctor that gets this. I was a necessary part of something. And I was willing to go through personal sacrifice for a greater cause. We do it all the times in our lives. When we see ourselves as part of something greater than ourselves, we will do anything for that cause, even at personal sacrifice. You ever hear the story of the 8 fighter pilots that flew in to bomb the Iraqi nuclear plant? These are 8. This is the most amazing story, I think, in recent Jewish history. You've got 8 of the top pilots. In Israel, to be a pilot, you've got to be like the best of the best of the best. And they took the best of those guys. And they're all normal people. With families and mothers and fathers and little kids who they hug and they kiss and they love, and wives who they hold their hands and take long walks. They've got lives. Great lives. And if you watch them and you read the transcripts, all they were thinking about was getting close enough to the reactor to bomb it. And in no way did they ever anticipate to come out alive. Are they insane? Who's going to raise their children? Who's going to kiss their kids? How How could you give up your life? So I want to read to you something. It's amazing. This is so, I want to read to you what Rafi Eitan, their general, said before they left. He said, you've all read the Bible. These are secular, Chiloni Jews. You've all read the Bible. You know the history of our people. And we are now faced with the greatest threat in that long history. An atomic bomb by a madman terrorist who cares nothing for human life. That's what this mission is all about. Protecting our country. The future of Israel rests on your skill and ability to destroy that nuclear reaction. My personal safety? I got a cause. And any person who's a parent or who's from a parent, you know this. Your parents would do anything for you. They'd run in traffic for their kids. They would go through anything. Why? Why do we do this? Why do we run around for people for? Because the minute we see ourselves as necessary for something greater than ourselves, we allow ourselves to give to it, even at personal sacrifice. And that is exactly, exactly what Mordechai was trying to get Esther to get. And you know what? She got it. The next line in the Megillah, she says, Lech Knosis Kol Yehudim, let's go. Get rocking, get fasting, we're doing this. I'm going in. And she goes in, she pulls off a performance of a lifetime, and she'll be remembered forever. Chazal say that Esther says, Kivuli Lidoros. She begged Chazal, I want to be remembered, I want to be set, Lidoros Lenetzach. And Chazal say that the story of Purim, the story of Esther, is our story. That's us. Every single Purim. Purim is such a secular holiday. We don't have holidays like this. It's not even in Eretz Yisrael. No Jewish names. No mention of God. No Kohanim doing stuff with candles. God's not splitting seas. It's a regular day. We get drunk and give shalach manas. We hear a story about one minister that tries to kill us, another minister that tries to save us. This happened probably in some form every year. Because the whole goal of Purim, the whole purpose, is for us to see ourselves in the story, to peel back the veil, the Hester, of that story, of that moment, of that day. And once we do, we can then see ourselves in the world that way. That's the goal of Purim. That's how it works. And so the question for us tonight is, how do we see that? We've been through 1,000 Purims. What's going on? Why are we not walking into Purim and getting it? Why don't we see ourselves in the story of Esther? Why don't we look at Purim and get it? And then look at our lives and get it? What are we missing? So that's what I want to talk about. Because if we get it, then in many ways, when we go through them, we can be like Esther. We can get to a point, potentially in our lives, where we can flip, see the world in different glasses, and lead our lives differently. So Chazal happens to be very creative when they want to teach us something. What they do is they mess around with customs. As Jews, we don't do anything for nothing. Guaranteed. And anything we do is a fight. We're Jews. If Chazal messes with anything, there's a reason. But there's one thing that they're very clear not to mess with. And if they do, it means a lot. And that's Torah reading. Right? Jewish prime time is Shabbos morning. Right? Think about it. Every single day of the whole week, we're always busy. Getting our people together is nearly impossible. Once a week, we all get together. Shabbos morning. And not even too early in the morning, because we get to shul. And once the afternoon comes, we're all sleeping or napping or eating or whatever. We got a period of time. It's called prime time. Right around Torah reading. And if Chazal wants to teach us something, what they do is they mess with that. And by messing with that, by teaching us different lessons, by changing around the Torah portions a little bit, they try to teach us something to prepare us for what's ahead. So what does Chazal do? Amazing. Right before Purim comes, Chazal changes two Torah portions and says, please, when you read these, pay attention. Because this is the lesson that you're going to need to know before you come into Purim. So when you get into Purim, you're looking at it with the right perspective. First one, Shkalim. Strange. God says, I want to count my people. Why? You're God. You know how many we are. You don't need to count us. You just know the number. And he goes, no. I want to count my people because I love my people. And when you love something, you count it. You love money, you look at your bank accounts all day. You did well on a test, you're checking those grades all the time. You love your children, you count them. In the car, out of the car, at night. That's what it's like. You love something, you count it. So I got to count my people. But here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to count you in a specific way. I want everybody to give me a half shekel. No more, no less. Ha'ashir lo yarbe. V'hadah lo yamin. I don't want more. Why? Because here Chazal is teaching us the first two points of how to see our purpose in this world. When we get to Purim, it's too late. How do we see? What are the lessons that we need to learn to see our purpose in this world? Number one, I'm counting you because I love you. Rav Tzvi Meyer one time came to Eish Kodesh, and he spent the entire hour lecture telling us, I couldn't believe it, one thing. God's real, and he loves you. And we're like, we got it. I gotta tell you another story. God's real, and he loves you. And we're like, we got it. And again, and again. And I went over to Weinberger, my Rebbe, after this. I said, I don't get it. So he goes, that is the number one lesson that most people don't live with. God's real. Real. And when you grow up sometimes in an environment like ours, where you're right away from, like you're a kid, we're doing so much stuff. We got so much to do. What to wear, what not to wear. We're getting up in the morning and we're doing things. We can and 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 can. We're learning so much things. How to do things, how to do things. This thing and that thing. We can go our entire lives and never live with that simple reality that God is real and that he loves us. And you can look at people and they're so advanced in their Yiddishkeit and they're not living with it. They don't really believe it. If I don't daven, then he's probably going to zap me, right? I got to kiss up to him for my test because I got to do well. Because he needs me to daven to him because why else am I doing it for? And I got to do this and I got to do that. And oh my God, I'm going to hell because I did this and I did that and God doesn't care about me. And we can go our entire lives doing so much stuff, looking so good, dressing and talking the part so well, never in our lives really believing that he's real and that he loves me no matter what. Unconditional. Even if I wasn't the best kid, even if I'm not the best kid, he loves me. And that is so basic to understanding our role in life. Understanding our role in life is like being the CEO of a company. Before we even get close to being the top, to being able to control what we do and what we shouldn't do, be able to know what are the good decisions and wrong decisions, who should I should not hang out with, what should I do in my life or shouldn't I do in my life, before we even get to that position where we can be in the top of a company, we need basics. We need prereqs. Prereq number one. Someone once told me something amazing. He said, if you want to find MS in the world, you want to find truth, it's simple, but difficult. This is simple, but so difficult. To live with the realization that God is real. Sheish mitzvos tamidios. He's real. And he loves us. Even me. And even you. And God says, before you even get to Purim, before you even get to Esther, before you even get to that moment of Mimacharish Tacharishi, forget about it. We're talking about Tafkid. We got to get to first base. First base is Shkolim. If you don't even believe me that I'm counting you because I love you, forget it. You get up the Tafkid? Purpose? I don't get it. The first thing we do in our lives, in deciding what we should be doing in our lives, we've got a role to play. We've got a lives to lead. We're all Esther. There's something that we need to do in the world. Before we even get to first base, if we don't wake up every day and know it for sure, if we daven because we're scared he's going to zap us, or don't do things because we're worried about what he may do to us, or really deep down think, like, he loves the big rabbi, but not me, because he doesn't know me. Trust me, Charlie, if you knew me. It doesn't start. Step one, Mishkalim, is living with that reality. Really buying it. Not just saying it, but buying it. But it goes so much deeper. Because we live in the physical world. And in the physical world, There are the haves and the have-nots. They're the people that are more important and less important. We're an academic society. Some people get into the best universities and some don't. Some get into the best law schools or business schools or medical schools and some don't. That's how it works. Then we have the A's and we have the D's and the F's. The first class in economy. That's how we think life works. We only assume that's exactly what happens in the spiritual world, right? We have the most important people and we have the less important people, right? We have people that they write books about and they tell stories about. Those are the important Jews. And they're those that we're not. Where you sit on the machitza matters how important you are. How much you do must mean how important you are, right? The more stuff that I can do, the more important I am, right? Isn't that how it works? That's how it works in the other world. And we have this like thing where we really think that there's a hierarchy, that God loves some people more and some people less. And God says, listen, before we get to Purim, Ha'ashir, lo yarbe, don't give me more than a half shekel. Vahadal, step up. I love you just the same. Every single person in this world is equal. So I came across this awesome Ramchal. Just in case you didn't believe me, this is the best. It's worth coming tonight, I think, just to hear the Ramchal. Derech Hashem, the way of God. Can I get a better book than this? The Ramchal, everyone knows the Ramchal, right? 18th century, the Mac Daddy, as we say in Brooklyn, of rabbis. Just the Ramchals, Mesil Shisharim, he's the man. I want to read it to you in Hebrew, because everyone here knows. This is the Ramchal that changes the way we look at life. The way is how life works. Every single one of us is like a servant to the king that stands guard. Ubein kulam, and between us all, tzarech shetishalim avodas malchuso. He's got a world to run. So God's got to figure out how is he going to get his world. So he takes all the tasks and he splits it up amongst all of us. Each one gets one. Until each and every one of us does our task. The way the world works is that every one of us has a specific task. And God, in his infinite wisdom, splits everything up and goes, here's all the stuff that I got to do. It's a lot. How the heck am I going to do all of this? I have an idea. Let me give each of my children one piece different than their brothers and sisters. And if either of us at any point say, I must not be important, I'm not going to come into this system, it doesn't work. And if our eyes are open this morning, it means that there's something that we have to do, or we wouldn't open them, because someone else can do it. And that is something that is so hard for us to get. Because in the real world, we look at what's chashuv, we look at what's important, and we assume that that's what we should be doing. I gotta talk, I gotta act, I gotta pretend that I'm like that, because that's what everybody likes. If I talk this way, if I go to this shir, or date that girl, or do this thing or that thing, then isn't that what people want? Shouldn't I have four or five professions that I can choose from that gives everybody, when they see me on the street, what are you doing? Shouldn't I go to these and these, should I act this way or do this thing? Because that's what they're doing, and if they're doing it, it must be chashuv, that's the best. And God says, that's not really how it works. Every single person has certain talents and strengths and weaknesses, and a background and parents different than everyone else. And it is only with their knowledge and understanding of what it is that makes them unique that his tasks can be complete. If we are not thinking about, on a daily basis, why am I on this earth? Why was I born to my parents for? My dad's like this, my mom's like this. Not like so-and-so's parents that are much better or worse. Why did I come to this school, have these friends, or end up in that seminary, or date this guy? Why am I different? Doesn't work. Why was I born like this? Why am I smarter than so-and-so? Or better or worse looking? You know, this is my... if we don't spend our time thinking, why am I unique to this world? What is it about me that God wants me to give? What strengths and what panoply of talents and weaknesses that I have? If that is not part of our thinking, then how in the heck are we going to know what to do? How do we know what to act? What moves to make? So sometimes what we do is we'll say, well, he's doing it, and he looks, sounds pretty cool. I want to be like that. Well, bigger, the bigger house I have must be the better I'm doing. So let me just spend my life trying to get a bigger house. And I can tell you, by the way, I'll share this with you. In 2010, when you work in a real estate company and live through the recession we lived through, you can't imagine the amount of people that spend their entire lives on just getting the biggest house on the block. That's it. They'll fake everything else. And they build their beautiful nest egg in their retirement, and they just continue to pour more money into their bank accounts as they step over their families and friends and top kid. And then 2009 hits. Boom. Gone. Sorry all your stock was in Bear Stearns. There's no more Bear Stearns. And now you wake up and you're 55 years old. And your whole life, you've never thought about why we're in this world. I just thought it's to make money and look good, right? And now here I am at the end of my life. 55 slipped to 120, but you know, 20, 30 years. My relationship with my wife, not what it could be. My kids, my friends, my spirituality. I thought it was about money, and I don't even have money now. That's the saddest. That is the worst. And I see these people. I speak to them. This is what happens in the real estate business. People lose their all empires in a minute. Every moment, shkolem. God says, stop. We're not even up to Purim yet. Let's not get complicated. We're not even at like anything lundish. We're not anywhere near a sugya that's complicated yet. Let's stay simple for a minute. If you think you're on this earth, not because I need you like crazy, if you're missing that, we're not at first base. We didn't finish the prereqs. Why are we here for? What is it about you that God needs you here for? What are your talents that you got? What are the things that you hate? And Kadosh Baruch Hu says, when you live with the realization that you're equal to everybody else, and whether your grade was A or B in some test, it doesn't really, you have to try your hardest, but that's not really how I value you. When we change our perspective from the race that we live in into the race of why am I here, everything changes. Everything. The way we look at the world changes. And the rabbis say, before we get to the Purim, you got to get that message. You got to really, really believe this. I'm here and I love you. And if you don't live with the realization that Kadosh Baruch Hu is in your lives, forget that. I don't care how good we look. But more importantly, if you don't believe that you've got a task that only you can serve, that only you can do, and that's why your eyes are open today, then I have it at first base. So the rabbis say, the chazal say, that's how we're going to do it. Before we even get to Purim. Before we're even going to start. And by the way, just a minute. What I'd like to do when we're done with this is I'd like to open up for questions. So if you have something in your mind to think about, this is supposed to be an interactive discussion. Please feel free to, as soon as we're done, ask. I'm only making a shorter presentation for that purpose. But that's what they're saying. They're saying, before we get to Purim, let me make sure you guys get the basic lessons. And now we get to the last moment before Purim. And the rabbis say, here it is. This is the grand puba of Torah portions. This is where it all comes down. This is Milchemes Amalek. And if you ever noticed how strange it is that we actually care so much about reading the Parshas Amalek, right? The whole purpose of the Parshas Amalek is what? Macho Timcha Ezecher Amalek. Right? That's our whole goal in life, is to erase their memory. That's what we do. That's our task. That's why Shaul HaMelech got knocked out, because he didn't fully erase their memory. And what do we do as people? Chazal say, listen, shul, not the oraisa. One time a year, Torah, you got to show up. Amalek. Why? I thought we were supposed to be forgetting about them. Who's Amalek? They don't even exist anymore. And the fact that it's so much that they don't exist that we don't even know who they are, so everybody's Amalek. The Nazis, Amalek. We have some kind of Arab bomber, Amalek. The guy who failed the MRO test, Amalek. Every single guy in the world that we don't like, when we don't like him, if we have different opinions on someone, we're like, oh, it makes perfect sense. Because he thinks this, he must be Amalek. We don't even know who they are. They don't really exist. Except for us. The whole world has forgotten about them. You ever notice that? Stop a guy in the street and go, hi, have you heard of Amalek? He's looking at you like you're crazy. We're the only ones from Jews that remember Amalek. I have an idea if you want to wipe out their memory. Why don't you stop doing the Amalek thing? What would happen if in a couple of years we stopped doing Amalek? You know what would happen? We would wipe out the memory of Amalek, right? That makes perfect sense. What's going on? We're the only guys that actually remember Amalek. So we get together and go, what? Everybody please, women and children, be quiet. Everyone come to shul. Forget Amalek. Awesome. That's what it's going to end next year. Doesn't make sense. So what are we doing? Go crazy with Amalek. So who is Amalek? Everyone knows the story. Jews come out of Egypt. They're rocking. God comes in the world and he shows the world he's real. The Medrash says that when we came out of Egypt, the entire world shook. Everybody now realized there's a God and there's a people. Awesome. There's meaning. It's not just random. There's purpose. God created a world. And now he's appointed a group of people to be his emissaries, to show the world how to live your life in a way that the divine would love it. And then, Asher Karcha Baderech, one nation happened upon us on the way. And Chazal said the reason why they say happened is because their whole ideology was happening. Randomness. Amalek said, I can't stand this. If there's one thing that I can't stand, is purpose and meaning. So even though you're out in the desert and you're not threatening me in my country, even though you haven't bothered me at all, you just came out as slaves, I have to attack you. Because your existence in this world, purpose and meaning, that's too much for me. I am randomness. I am coincidence. And we can't survive. And that was the four. And God says, they still exist in our minds. There's still a war going on in our minds called Milchemes Amalek. And every single moment we say, that just happened, right? I just ended up here because. And this just happened to me because. I'm sitting in this room because. No, that's not, come on, stop it. It'd be so weird. If that's not really how it, every single second of our lives that we think is not divinely ordained, Amalek is dominating. And winning. So the rabbi said, you're entering into the Yontif of Purim. This is the time where you got to see it for what it is. If I got to get you to Purim, I got to teach you how to fight the fight. The boys are coming. This is it. This is the battleground of what it means to be a Jew. You're standing in front of Purim. This is where you're going to look at a secular story and you got to have the glasses to pull it out and see me. How are you going to see me when you're losing to Amalek? It just happens to be that she's the queen and this and that. So we get everyone together. We go, listen. The battle's still going. You want to erase them, identify them, and then erase them. In our lives, we think that it's coincidence. We don't realize that every second of our lives is our tafkid. We think tafkid is like this glorious thing that one day we walk up in heaven and it's like a picture of what we could have been. And either we got there or we didn't get there. What's my tafkid? Tafkid, our role in life, is every second. Because every second when we act, the whole world comes around us and gives us a chance to do the right or wrong thing. Whether it's talking to a friend, or davening right, or saying hi to my mom, or studying for a test. Today I was talking to a tzaddik today. I went to this big tzaddik today for a bracha. They're talking about working and klal. For those of you guys in the parasha, you know exactly the struggle. And he goes, what? There's a difference? When you work, it's every second for God. And you think because you're in a school or a law firm, it's any different than you're in a yeshiva or you're in a kiruv center? Every second of our lives is an entire world that God puts and we choose. And when we make a decision to go right or left, the entire world refigures again and we get another choice. And because we don't fully get the first point that God's real, we don't can fathom how could it be that every second of my life is my tafkid? And every second of my life I could be choosing right or wrong. God can't do that. That's hard. For him to do that for me and everybody else in the whole wide world. But that's how it works. And that's Amalek saying, nah, tafkid is some big thing that's across the yellow brick road. And then you'll know you get your tafkid. Don't work on it today. When you get old, you'll get your tafkid. Chazal say, It's every second. Every second is imacharesh tacharishi. Every second is our tafkid. And when you see the world this way, by the way, your life changes. I'll tell you a great story. And for those of you who are in CSY, you've heard this before. I once saw a program on Discovery Channel. And it was like this African tribal leader who was a very big close talker. You see those close talkers? You know Seinfeld close talker? Right up in your face. So these cool Doctors Without Borders went down, and they were like trying to like give vaccines and stuff. And they bring the guy over. And he goes, all right, come here to the African tribal leader. Closer. You can imagine the whole Crest Colgate thing didn't make its way down there. And he said, closer. And this like cool doctor was like, it's cool. He's like, closer. He's like, I got it. And they're like, they're right up in the air. So he turns to this guy and goes, why is he talking to me so closely? So he says, he's a spiritual being. When he's really close to you, he looks right into your eyes. And he goes, I just think he can't see. They're like, what? He's like, check this out. So he calls his buddy from America. He sends in like 50 pairs of glasses. And they try these glasses on the tribal leader. And this program is like living in his life for that, whatever he does. And now living in your life when the glasses change. Right? Like he wakes up in the morning and every day he goes in and he waves at the lady that waves him in the morning. And then he goes in and he plays with the little kids, you know, and then he puts on his, you see him come, everyone comes to his tent and he puts on his glasses. And he walks in and sees like that person was really a tree that he waved in every day. And the kids were really like a bunch of bears that he played with. Like his whole life changed. And that's exactly how it is in our lives. The world doesn't change. Our glasses change. When you live your life this way, when you live your life with the realization that there's no coincidences and that you're in this world for a task, all of a sudden the exact same people and the exact same circumstances that you've gotten with today, oh my God, I didn't realize that was my friend. I can see blue and yellow now. I got my glasses on. And that's a whole other way of living your life. Can you imagine not living this way? Can you imagine going your whole life never asking, what am I here for? 60, 70, 80 years old, never thinking about it? Just bigger houses or more chashuv? And Chazal is saying, please, when you get to Purim, before you get to Esther, this is how you do it. This is how it works. You believe in God, that He's real. You recognize that if your eyes are open, there's a reason for them. And your whole job is to figure that out. Why am I here? I read this whole book the other day. It was like, I don't know, some weird psychology, but it was cool. About how your whole purpose in life is your parents and the way they raised you and how they didn't raise you. Puts you together in a way, and that's why you're here. Your whole life, every second of who you are, is for a reason. And everything that God puts in your way from this second forward, from now on, when you walk out that door, every single thing that goes on in your life is God given to you. And that's poor. That's how you wear the glasses. That's how you get your role in life. That's how you live with purpose. Because every second is purpose. And then you see things and do things in the right way. And as you're doing more and more in the right way, you grow and grow and grow. I'll tell you one more story. I'm going to be done. I'll tell you one more good story. I have in my company, I am charge of the intern program. So I don't know if you guys know me a bunch of years ago, I was a little heavier a bunch of years ago, and I went on this crazy kick to lose weight. So I lost a lot of weight, I went to the gym a lot. And I was, if those of you guys, anyone that goes to the gym a lot, you know that if you're just doing things on your own, you can, you know, do some stuff, you lose some weight, but you really can't get the real definition you're looking for. So I was struggling in the gym a lot, not really seeing the results. No to do, too cheap to buy a personal trainer, no way. You know what I'm saying? Like, I play pool, I'll just figure it out myself. So I'm looking at my resumes, and because of the economy, you get a ton of intern resumes. And I noticed in one of the guy's intern resumes, it said he was a personal trainer in his hobby. And I'm thinking, oh, this is going to be awesome. So I put him on the top of the list. I tell the guy some reason why he has to be on top of the list. He's like, okay. He comes in. He's like, well, I did this internship and that internship, and I got my grades. I'm like, yeah. Talk about the personal training thing. He's like, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, the Gold's Gym and this gym and this gym. I'm like, what would you think like I should do? He's like, well, I should do this. I'm like, you're hired. He's here on Monday. He's like, really? I'm like, you're hired. He's like, great. Comes in Monday morning, all excited. He's got his legal pad and his suit on. I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm ready to take... I'm like, why do you have a suit on for? He's like, I'm the intern. I'm like, get in the gym, put your clothes on, and we're going to be... You're my personal trainer. It was the best thing ever. For free. So it was great. It was the best summer of my life. So I take him down to the gym, and he says to me, all right, show me what you do. I'm like, so proud. Because I do everything in the gym. Like, you know, if there's a machine, I'm pounding it. So I go through the whole thing, And he's literally holding back laughter. So I'm like, remember, I'm still your boss. So he's like, you know, trying to hold back laughter. He's like, I can see why you haven't really grown. I'm like, why is it? He's like, you're doing cardio with the machines. He's like, it's nice that you're doing the moves, but you're not doing anything. I'm like, what do you mean? I look at the guy, I see how much he's doing, and I do that much. He's like, that's not how it works. The way you build muscle in life, if anyone's working out, let me tell you how. Very simple. You do your reps. The last three have to kill. If you can get the last three up without killing, it's cardio. It's nice. You're doing the right stuff, but you're not growing. You're not building muscle. The last three don't kill. For you, ain't working. The person next to you can do it, but the person next to you can't. Not how it works. That's Tofkin in a nutshell. Tofkin in a nutshell is when you go to bed at night, you make sure you live the life where the last three killed. Where you did something that day that you knew you could do that was so hard, but you did it anyways, and it killed you. Not the feeling you get when you say the right thing to somebody, and it kills you. Or when you do something that's so hard to do, but you know what? I gotta do it anyways. I gotta schlep here. I gotta do that. I gotta try harder. It kills, doesn't it? When you go to bed every night and it kills, you know what happens? It rips. And you grow back stronger. And then it rips. And then you grow back stronger. And you wake up one day and you're a whole other person. It's like when your great aunt from Israel sees you from your birth to your bar mitzvah. She goes, oh my God, you got so big! And you're like, I didn't get so big, I got like me, right? I'm looking at myself every day in the mirror, I didn't get big. She sees you 13 years, you grow. That's the game. You rip, you grow. You rip, you grow. You wake up one morning, you're a gadol. You're mamish a gadol. You're doing your tafkid. Even if they write you a book. Even if nobody knows. Who cares? You're doing your tafkid in this world. What's that feeling? You know that feeling you get when you're doing the right thing? It's a sense you have. Viktor Frankl talks about it in his book, Man's Search for Meaning. It's a sense you have in life when you're doing the right thing, when you're doing something hard, but it's right. It's called happiness. L'yishrei lev, somebody who's straight, who knows what he's doing, simcha. Happiness. We think happiness is getting stuff. So we go out and get stuff. And then we get the stuff and say, no, happiness is getting that thing. And then we get that thing and we go, you know what? Happiness is getting that thing. And we go, our whole lives are like that. It's that thing and that thing and that thing and that thing. When you're a little kid, you want a lollipop. And then we get older, we want a bike. And we go, that's going to make me happy. And then in junior high, it's going to make me happy. When I get into high school, oh, totally get to happy. When I get to college, oh, then I'll be happy. When I get out of college, the real world will be happy. Like, this is the real world. When I get back into college, that'll be make me happy. When I get a big house, it'll make me happy. When I get the biggest house, I'll make, when I retire, that's when I'll be happy. And we live our lives this way, and if you don't believe it, look around the world. Talk to people. Look at how people live their lives. Oh, you should see, when I'm going to be 80 years old and retired, oh, I'll be happy. Can you imagine living your life this way? It's not happiness. Happiness you got to accomplish in life. Happiness is when you live with this. When you feel this at night, when you go to bed and it hurt, when you know you're doing your tafkid, even though it hurt like crazy, happiness. So Chazal say, Mishenechnas Adar, Marbim b'simcha. If you're paying attention this month, Chazal say, this is the month. You got to pay attention. Because if you're paying attention this month and you see the whole world differently, guess what you get? Simcha. This is it. You're playing this game. This is what you want in life. This is the month that I'm teaching it to you. If you go through Purim and it's just like another thing, and the world is just the same thing the world was beforehand, and we look at the same with the same colored glasses, trying our hardest to run the race, not knowing which way we should be going. Should I go north or south? I'm not really sure. You know the feeling you get sometimes? The wheels are moving, but I don't know if I'm going the right way. That's not happiness. That's misery. And Chazal saying, this is the time. Don't miss this. Don't miss this month. Don't get drunk and forget about what we're doing here. This is the month to realize, Shkolim, I'm here. Even you, I'm here. Even if you're a girl, I'm here. Every person, I'm here. And I love you like crazy no matter what. Even if you messed up. It's okay, you're human. Welcome to being a Jew. And you are, if your eyes are open, you've got a purpose. And I need you, God says. I need you like crazy. There's a reason why you were chosen in the fourth quarter of Jewish history. Not just because. I don't know why me, but that's over here. And if you stop looking at the world like it's a coincidence, and you start realizing that everything that I put in front of you is me telling you to do something, and you choosing right or wrong, and you make it kill, you'll wake up one morning and you're a different person. You won't know how it happened. There won't be one moment where it's, you're just a different person. And the whole way through, from start to finish, you will have something called simcha. And that's what we're striving for in life. At the end of the day, you boil it down to what we all want, it's not covet, it's not honor, it's happiness. Because if we have all the other stuff and not happiness, look at Hollywood. And that's my speech. And that's my message. And that's my plea. Sometimes when I talk to guys like you, I feel very honored, because in many ways you stand at the crux of Judaism in the world. You, at one point, you're so part of the regular world. We talk it, we think it, we act it, we get it. But at some point, we're so different from everybody else. We stand sometimes at the bridge between the whole world and the Torah world. And in many ways, sometimes we're the only ones that can communicate that. We're the only ones that can embody that. Sometimes we're the only ones that people look and say, that's what it means to be a Torah Jew. She looks just like me, but she's not. I'll tell you one NCSY story and then I'm going to be done. There's one girl that I saw her after a while. She became very firm. She's totally secular. And I said, what turned you on to Yiddishkeit? I was expecting like a big speech, Abdullah. And she goes, that girl. I said, really? I went over to the girl. I said, see what you did to that girl? She said, I never said a word to her my whole life. I went back to the first girl. I said, you know her? She goes, no, I never said a word to her my whole life. I said, you said that she made you firm. She said, look at the way she dresses. Look at how happy she is when she walks around. And I said, I'd like to be more religious, but I can't do that. I'm going to look like a weirdo. But how she manages to be presentable and attractive, but yet modest. And she put, I want to be like that. Changing the world. The whole world is looking at us. And we can change the whole world that way. In our own way and our own time. So with this, I want to conclude and say thank you. In your lives, you should be zochah to achieve your tafkid, to never give up the search, to never give up on who you really are. And with our lives, we all should grow inch by inch till ultimately we do our task in this world. Thank you so much for listening and much appreciated.